you've seen my office, you've noticed I have a lot of books on my shelf, and a lot of them are academic books, but I also have a large section of children's Bibles. It's always fascinating to me to look at children's Bibles. I like the different artwork, the different ways that retell the stories. But one of the interesting things with children's Bibles is paying attention to which stories from the Bible are in the children's Bible and which stories aren't. This story is probably one of those ones that doesn't show up in many children's Bibles. And you think, well, why not? It seems fairly simple. But if we read on in the story, we're going to share a little more of the story, you'll see that's probably not a story we want to tell kids. So let's set the stage here. So we are in the book of Judges and kind of what's happened leading up in the story of the Bible to this point. So we have the creation of a good earth by God, and then people choose their own way or fall into sin. And God's rescue plan is to come through a family, through a man named Abram and his son Sarah. And that becomes the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, and they grow and they expand. But eventually, God's chosen people, the Israelites, end up in slavery in Egypt. And then God sets them free through these miraculous series of events. We know, like, it eventually ends with the crossing of the Red Sea. They come to Mount Sinai, and there God gives them the commandments and the way they're to live to show God's glory to the world. But part of the promises to Abraham was also that they would have a land to live in. They're still wandering in the desert. And so they finally come to what we often call the promised land, the land of promise, which is Israel. And they come, and the book of Joshua tells how they entered into that land and they began to settle in the land and take over. The book of Judges picks up after they've settled in the land, and we see this turn. Joshua passes away, and as Jan pointed out, and what the beginning pages of the book of Judges say is the people forgot who God was. That they no longer remembered the stories. And because of that, they began to say what was happening and they forgot what was going on. They forgot the stories of God and consequently they fell into sin. And they begin this pattern that the book of Judges described where they choose their own way. God sends some sort of army or allows a foreigner to come into punishment. They cry out to God. God sends a deliverer. Things get better for a while. Then they fall back into sin and the cycle repeats. And so this is where chapter 4 picks up. And this term judges refers to the leaders. We use the term judge. We normally think of someone in a court of law. The judges would have done some of that kind of thing where people would come and they would have a dispute. But they were also the leaders of the nation. And so that's where it picks up. And so then we pick up the story of Deborah. And I'm going to just kind of highlight the big picture of the story, and then we'll come back and look at some of this. So the story of Deborah begins, the reading that Jan said. So there's this woman named Deborah. She's a judge. Word comes to her. She sends Barak because they're under oppression by this man named Sisera under Jabin's command. Says, go and conquer them, or go and fight against Sisera's army. And so later on, we see the army of Sisera defeated. And Sisera flees, and he ends up fleeing to the tent of a woman named Jael, who is a foreigner. And so he goes into Jael's tent. Jael, you know, invites him into the tent. She puts a blanket on him. She gives him some milk to drink. He falls asleep. And this is the part in the children's Bible where they skips over, because while Sisera is sleeping, she takes a tent peg and a hammer and puts the peg through his head. If you can find a children's Bible with that story in it, or if you're free to, you know, maybe you want to publish your own. Find that little niche market for the kids. I mean, that, you know, that might get kids into the Bible. They're like, wait, there's somebody in the Bible puts a tent peg through somebody's head? I want to read more, right? So that's the big picture of the story. So let's go back and look a little bit at what happens in the story. So we're in Judges chapter 4. This starts off again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Now that Ehud was one of the previous judges that had led, and that's also another great story that kids enjoy reading because there's all kinds of graphic details about how Ehud defeats his enemy, but you can read that on your own, chapter 3. It says, so now the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin. Now, God didn't literally exchange money with Jabin for the people of Israel, but it's this sense of, I think, when he sells them into lands, when you sell something, what are you doing with it? You're just like, it's not mine anymore, right? I'm getting rid. And so that's the sense of what I think is going on here. When the Lord sells Israelite, he's like, yeah, I'm not dealing with you anymore. You're not mine anymore. And so he gives them away. And so Sisera is the commander of his army. And he comes, and what we're told is that he had 900 chariots fitted with iron, which is significant because the Israelites didn't have iron chariots. And even back in chapter 1, the tribe of Judah, kind of the leading tribe, it says they took possession of the hill country. This is chapter 1, verse 19. But they were unable to drive the people from the plains because they had chariots fitted with iron. In other words, Sisera had the stuff that Israel couldn't seem to defeat. So this is a particularly difficult and challenging foe. And it says he oppressed them for 20. He didn't just rule over them. He was oppressing them for 20 years. And so after 20 years of oppression, what do? Help God. Do something about this. They cry out. And then we're introduced to Deborah. At this point in the other stories, it always says something like, and God raised up a judge, or God sent to deliver. But Deborah's story is told a little bit different. It just says, now Deborah, a prophet, was leading Israel at the time. She was already there. It's not this sense of we're simply introduced to her. And I want to pay attention to how she's introduced in the description of her. It says, now Deborah, a prophet. What was the role of a prophet? The prophet did two things primarily. A prophet was someone who delivered God's word to the people. So we have in our Bible these books called the prophetic books or the prophets. So like Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Hosea and Amos. And a phrase occurs in many of them, something like, and the word of the Lord came to, or thus says the Lord. So one of the roles of the prophet was to say to the people, this is what God is saying. And oftentimes they weren't coming up with new things on their own. They were just reminding them of what they already knew. So the prophets would often point back to the commandments. Remember how I said the Israelites had gone to Sinai and they'd received these commandments from God. Oftentimes what the prophets would do would say, hey, remember when God said this? Well, you're not doing that. And so that was one of the roles. The second thing the prophet would do would often be just look at the current situation or look at an event and say, this is where God's at work. And so now we see Deborah as a prophet. She is the first person in the Bible described as a prophet since Moses. So we've gone a long period of time in Bible history. There was Moses, but all through the time of Joshua and everything else, she's the next one described as a prophet. Now, I read a number of commentators, people, scholars writing on this and different people who said, well, the reason Deborah, a woman, is made a prophet is because none of the men would do it. I would challenge you to find that written anywhere in here. That's not what it says. And when we're interpreting those things, sometimes we come with baggage. We come with ideas and can see things. Well, that's, and it's simply not there. And there isn't, aren't any, sometimes we can find other things and by little clues and words. There's nothing there in the text that suggests that the reason Deborah was chosen was because the men wouldn't do it. Now, I think it would have been a surprise to those hearing the stories that a woman was leading, because that's not the pattern, but it never says why she was, just simply says she was the one and she was leading. And we see the ways that she listens and does what God is saying. It says she was leading, and then it talks about her holding court under the palm. She gets a tree named after her. Under the palm of Deborah. Like, I want the pine of Carl, you know? Like, we can, you know, I can sit under the pine of Carl, and you can come, and I can settle you. No, I don't want to settle all your problems, but that's what Deborah did. She brought the people, and she settled their problems. And people were coming like, he stole my cow. He crossed over my, he built his fence on my side of the line. That's the kind of thing she was dealing with. And so she's sitting there and she's judging, she's leading the people and pointing them into the way of wisdom. So she's both a prophet and a judge. Two other people in the Bible are called prophets and judges, Moses and Samson. Only two other people who are given those two titles together. So we read about Deborah, we say, she is someone special. She's someone important. The other thing to notice about Deborah, and this we only notice if we read the rest of the book of Judges, she's the last of the judges about which nothing negative is said. We start reading on from here, and God sends a number of deliverers. There's eight more after Deborah. Every one of them has some sort of fault, some sort of way they don't trust God, some sort of way they're... Deborah doesn't. So we kind of see this is kind of the peak, and it just continues to go down from here. Now, we don't know, we don't see the scene where Deborah is spoken to by God, where God comes, but apparently she received a message from God because she calls Barak. We don't know much about him. We're told he's the son of Abinoam from Kadesh and Naphtali, but she calls him and said, this is the word. So this is in verse 6. The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you. So here's she doing. What's she doing? She's fulfilling that prophet function. She's received a word from God and she's passing it on. So she calls for Barak, Deborah, the prophet, the one who everyone in Israel recognizes, the one who speaks for God, says, Barak, come here. I got something to tell you. I want you to take 10,000 men and lead them up to Mount Tabor. And you're going to go up against Sisera. But I want to pay attention to the words that he says. First, we'll come back to it, but Barak initially says, nah, if you go with me, I'll go, but if you don't go with me, I won't go. I don't think Barak is a coward at this moment. I don't think that's the issue. Later on in the Bible, Barak's bravery is described. It could be that he thought maybe if he had Deborah, it'd be easier to gather armies. But I think as we read through the book of Judges, one of the constant refrains is this reminder of the people forgot what God had done. And so I think what's going on with Barak, again, it can go a couple different ways, but what I think Barak is saying at this point is he doesn't really trust in what God is doing. Maybe it's because he doesn't see what God has done. Maybe he hasn't experienced it for himself, but there's sort of this hesitation of like, I don't know, I need the prophet with me. But I want us to go back to what Deborah says to Barak. So back in verse 6, she says, go take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun and lead them up to Mount Tabor. And we might expect then I want you, but it says this, I will lead Sisera. Now who's the I in this phrase? God. I will lead Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and troops, and give him into your hands. So essentially, Deborah says to Barak, this is what God says. Just gather some men, take them up to Mount Tabor, and God will destroy Sisera's army. And Barak's like, maybe you should go with me. Deborah's pointed out, she says, you don't really have to do anything. God's going to fight the battle for you. But Barak hesitates. He's not sure. So Deborah goes with him. Even though he's been giving this word, he's been given an assurance of victories. Even though God has defeated numerous enemies in the past, it's this idea that they keep forgetting what God had done. So that was back in Judges 2. Well, listen to this. Judges 2, chapter 2, verse 10 and 11. After that, the whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors. And another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. In other words, they forgot what God had done. They forgot who God was and the kind of things he did. I think that's what's going on with Barak. And so Deborah says, I'll go with you. But because of the course you are taking, because you're not doing what God has called you to do, the honor will not be yours. For the Lord will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman. Because you didn't do what God called you to do, because you didn't faith, you're not going to get the honor. People aren't going to look and say, oh, Barak was the great general. He's the one who finally took care of Sisera. Instead, it's going to be a woman. And the significance of it being a woman is the women in those days weren't the ones who went into battle. There were certain people exempted from battle. It was the women, the children, and the Levites. So there was no expectation. Who's going to defeat the commander of the 900 chariots, the serious oppressor? Who's going to do that? A woman. And this is how it's going to happen. A woman, and again, we see this unexpected turn in which God does. So Deborah goes with Barak, goes on from like verse 12 and on following. They go up. And in verse 15, at Barak's advance, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and army. So again, what do we see? God's the one who defeats him. Barak takes the army up. The chariots are routed, except for Sisera. And Sisera, the mighty commander of the 900 chariots, he takes off running. And it says this. It says, Sisera, meanwhile, fled on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. So he goes, and the Kenites were, they weren't Israelites, they were foreigners. And this Heber was an ally of Jabin. And so he's sort of an ally, so he goes running to the tents. And it's interesting because he goes to Jael's tent, which is not normally, if you were going to visit someone's tents, the wife had her own tent. You wouldn't go to the wife's tent, you go to the husband's tent. But he goes to the wife's tent. We might speculate a little later why he does that. And so he goes into the tent, and Jael comes out to meet him. Come, my lord, come right in. Don't be afraid, she says in verse 18. So he entered her tent, and she covered him with a blanket. I'm thirsty, he said. Please give me some water. She opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him up. And then Sisera says, stand in the doorway of the tent. If someone comes by and asks you, is anyone in there, say no. In other words, he's hiding in the tent. He's like, you know, go out there and cover for me. But Jael, Heber's wife, picked up a tent peg and a hammer and went quietly to him while he lay fast asleep, exhausted. She drove the peg through his temple into the ground, and he died. Kind of unexpected there, you know. And then finally, Barak arrives, and Jael comes out and says, yeah, you looking for Sisera? He's in there. I took care of him. And so that's where this story ends. Then chapter 5 is sort of this song that Deborah, along with Barak now, sings that recounts it, but also in some sense interprets the story. Tells us a little bit more about what's going on. So first we've seen what? Deborah has prophesied what? That God will deliver Sisera into Barak's hands. That's exactly what happens. Deborah says, a woman will get the honor instead of you. That's exactly what happens. And now there's this song that goes on. And the song is not just a retelling. It's a commentary in some sense. It's the prophet explaining, and it's teaching the people. And Barak even joins in. And I think as we see the song and the story together, we're reminded of a couple things. One is that Deborah is a prophet. She's one who speaks for God. We see someone confident in what God says and faithful and trusting. We see what it looks like to do that with a woman as an example. So sometimes as we look at our Bible, we say, there aren't a lot of women leaders we see in the Old Testament, but when we see women show up in the Old Testament consistently, again and again, they're faithful. I've skipped over some of the stories of women, but pay attention to the women in the Old Testament. Oftentimes, they're the ones who are faithful. Not always, but oftentimes, they're the ones who are faithful. And here we see Deborah as this example of someone who is faithful. And then we see that Barak joins in. Remember Barak now, initially when he received that word from God about going, he was a little bit hesitant. But now he's singing. And he's saying, praise the Lord. And he talks about how the Lord went out and the earth shook and the heavens poured out, the water poured. He now knows, he's experienced it for himself, that God would be the one to save. He's not just remembering past deeds, he's experienced in the present. And I think that's important for us to think about is, we read the stories of the Bible, the stories that are told, the record told of God's great events. But the most recent ones are 2,000 years ago. And sometimes they can feel distant and in the past. And it's sometimes easy to forget the kind of things that God does. That's one of the reasons we read these stories, is to remind ourselves of who God is and what God is like. We see his grace, we see his power, we see his might, we see his care and his love for his people. And in the moments in today when we forget that, we go back to the stories to read. But one of the things that sometimes happens is we can hear a story about the past, but sometimes we need to experience something like that for ourselves. Maybe there's been something you're looking forward to, and your parents or your grandparents or an aunt and uncle says, oh yeah, I did that a while ago, and it was really hard, and it was a difficult thing. And you can hear the stories, but the stories aren't the same as you actually experiencing them for yourselves. Because sometimes, to be fair, when our family tells us stories, we're like, yeah, yeah, whatever. You walked uphill both ways in the snow to get to school, and things were so hard, and it was challenging, and it was difficult. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I was such a child. I was such a difficult child, and it was really hard, but, like, my kids are going to be angels, and it's going to be so easy to raise kids on my own. And we can say we know the truth, but what we need to experience, and here is what happens, is Barak experiences it for himself. He experiences God's power and salvation, and that allows him to sing. And so I think as we think about ourselves is we need to read the stories to remind ourselves of what God has done, but we also need to pay attention to how God is doing it in our own lives, to see it at work now, because that's hard sometimes, because we read the stories of the Bible and we see God fighting against these armies and destroying them, and he's lightning and thunder and waters parting and people are being raised from the dead. And we look around in our own world and we don't see that sort of stuff. But it doesn't mean God isn't at work right now. It doesn't mean God has changed. It doesn't mean God is any less powerful. But what we're called to do is maybe pay attention and say, where is God at work in this current generation? What sort of things is God doing right now? Where is his power at work? And so I think in this story, we're invited to say, when we begin to do that, it grows our faith. You know, where is God at work in this little group of people gathered at Fruitland Covenant Church? Where is God at work in the churches around Muskegon? Where is God at work in the churches in the United States? Where is God at work in the church around the world right now? And as we do that, as we pay attention, as we experience God's power and presence now, it grows our faith. And that's what this song of Deborah is inviting them to do, is because they begin to praise the Lord as they see where God is at work. So we need to read the stories from the past, but we also need to pay attention to what's going on in the current and begin to experience that and see it for ourselves. And in that, we learn to trust God. Another thing that the song makes clear than even the rest of the story is it's another picture of God choosing the vulnerable, the exploitable, and the unexpected to accomplish his purposes for God's deliverance. So I'm going to read a little bit of the song. The song's fairly long, but this is in verse 28 of chapter 5, and this is this song that Deborah and Barak are singing. And it says, through the window peered Sisera's mother. Behind the lattice, she cried out, why is his chariot so long in coming? Why is the chariot, the clatter of his chariots delayed? The wisest of her ladies answer, indeed, she keeps saying to herself, are they not finding and dividing the spoils, a woman or two for each man? Think about what's being said here. So Sisera's mom is at home. Like, why is not Sisera not back from the battle yet? And one of her women says, well, you know what men do after battle. Finding and dividing the spoils, a woman or two for each man. And the Greek, or the Hebrew term is kind of actually a womb for each man, a womb or two for each man. In some sense, the women aren't even people. They just become objects. And in this culture, in this world, that was part of the battles. When the battles were done, and the enemy army had been defeated, the men would take the women of the defeated army. They would abuse them. They would rape them. And so this is what's happening. And so now we see, go back to the story, when Sisera flees the battle and goes to Jael's tent, Jael's probably thinking, I'm one of them. Or in some sense, we see her, if not, she's not thinking that, she's put in this category by that song. She's defined as, these are the kind of people that were exploited, the kind of people who were abused, and that's exactly who God uses to defeat Sisera. So we have this perception of power, and we see God saying, I'm going to use the people who are subjugated, I'm going to use the people who are exploited, I'm going to use the kind of people who are normally abused, and they're going to be the ones who are going to deliver me, who deliver our people. And so sometimes we want to put limitations on what God can do, who can God use. And here is God using someone who's not a warrior to defeat Israel's mightiest foe. And so as we think about it, we think, well, what kind of people can God use? And one of the refrains of the Bible and pointed out in this story is God can use anybody. God uses all kinds of people. And in fact, a through line, if I would, through the Bible is God uses the unexpected, the overlooked, to do what he wants to do. We even come to Jesus. He's a craftsman, a wandering rabbi. And he does it even in an unexpected way. How does Jesus ultimately defeat the powers of evil? By death on a cross. By giving his own life. Not the way you would expect. You would expect a mighty battle, a great king. But he defeats the principalities and powers. He defeats the powers of evil by dying a shameful and horrible death. And so this storyline through the Bible is God does things in unexpected ways. And our temptation is to always, I'll rephrase that. The temptation for us is often to look for power in the ways that we define it. The story after this is Gideon. And Gideon's looking for power in worldly ways. He wants a big army. He wants the crown. He wants all these great things. And the storyline again and again says, no, God doesn't do things in the same way we expect. What we call power is not what God calls power. And so here's this story, this reminder of the way we think of power is not how God thinks of power. Barak thinks, oh, I don't know if I'm going to have enough men. They've got 900 chariots of iron. How am I going to do that? God says, don't worry about that. I've got this. And I'm going to do it in unexpected ways. I'm going to defeat the enemy of the army through a woman. And so we're reminded of how God, one, can overcome obstacles, but two, can use the unexpected ways. That it's God, not our weapons, not our might, that are numbers that bring victory. And we have a tendency to rely constantly on human means, the ways we concoct of achieving victory, whatever victory looks like. We look around the world and we see people or ideologies or things that we think, that's an enemy that needs to be defeated. And our pattern is to fall into, this is how the world fights. This is the way to do it. We gain power, we subdue, we overcome. And God says, that's not the way that I work. And we sometimes think, oh, that's a New Testament thing. That's a Jesus, that's a Paul thing. It goes back to the very beginning pages that God does things in unexpected ways. Which is why all through this story, he tells the Israelites, you don't need chariots. You don't do those things. Because when you start to build a great army, he warns them later. He said, if you get a king, I'll tell you what the king's going to do. First, he's going to tax you. And nobody likes taxes. But then he's going to send your sons off to war. And he's going to put your daughters into labor. He's going to do all these things because that's the way the world works. And Israel still says, we want a king. And that's exactly what happens. And what's God inviting them to do? He says, don't choose a worldly king. Don't choose worldly power. Let me be your king and I will take care of you. And we do the same thing. We try and find power in our own way. And what the invitation is from God here and later in the words of Jesus is to submit to him as the king. To see how he will do things. And so as we look around the world, I think the invitation from the story of Deborah and Jael and Barak is to notice that God works through unexpected people. He works through the powerless. He works through the overlooked. Those are the people that God often chooses to do what he does. We see the story and reminded not to put limitations on who God can use. And that God will do things as he sees fit. And we're reminded not to be tempted to think of power the way that the world around us invites us to do it. But instead to see power as God sees it. A power that is upside down. that's unexpected, that looks like a man dying on a cross. And so may we see in this story of Deborah and Jael a picture of who God is, who God has always been, a God who rescues, a God who saves in unexpected ways through unexpected people by his power and his power alone. Amen.